So I'm going to introduce Vince Blaine. Come on up here. He's the staff project engineer for system sustainment management at Lockheed Martin, and he's going to talk about what does the future for the DMSMS industry look like. So Vince.
Thanks, Glenn. I'd like to ask a question to the audience, and maybe it's a good time to get some little stretching in. How many consider DMS a problem for their industry? Could I get a show of hands? Okay, that's great, because I'm hoping after my presentation, it's no longer a problem, it's an opportunity. And let me explain. If I looked at an aircraft, say, you could look at 727s, 747s, military-type aircraft or vehicles or equipment that maybe have a 40-year life cycle or span that they want to plan to use that equipment. The general thinking is technology changes every 7 years. About every 8 years, we can go in and tell them, hey, we need a tech refresh or a tech upgrade. And over the life of that 40 years, I'll do four upgrades, from the original design to get me through that 40 years. If I could just extend each of those life cycles by 2 years, so instead of 8 years, I can make it go 10. And with the help of companies like Converge and other solutions that are out there to solve DMS, over the life of that aircraft, I can cut out a whole design cycle. And we talked about cost avoidance and what's that worth. That's a lot of money, you know, when you look at a $500 million program and maybe a tech refresh is going to be a $250 million. So maybe over the life of that 40 years, you saved $250 million. That's the real value. That's where the opportunity is. And if I had, a redesign was going to cost me $25 million and I was able to extend that product life cycle for $5 million, maybe I've saved $20 million. And what's that worth? So I look at it as an opportunity. There's a lot of money out there, and companies are spending a lot of money on DMS and resolutions. And how do we spend less and just make that system better and more efficient? So what does the future of the DMS industry look like? It's going to be lifecycle management. And let me put that in the context of DMS management and sustainment management. If I just did DMS management on something, I am identifying problems and maybe mitigations to solve those problems, but I'm looking at that maybe in a finite period of time. If I looked at, okay, how long could I sustain this piece of equipment on the platform? That's a better value, maybe a better answer. Hey, I have to do this, I have to do that, and I have to do this, and it'll cost this much to be able to do that. So that sustainment management, I can maybe put some cost on that, and I can put a time frame on that for how long that equipment might be there. But if I looked at the life cycle of the entire product and looked over the entire life cycle, whether I was in design concept or production or sustainment, I'm going to get a better answer, I'll get better results, I'll get more efficiencies if those phases of the life cycle of that product are hooked together. And the decisions, the DMS decisions, the obsolescence decisions, sustainment decisions, all are focused around that, we're going to get a better answer, and maybe we can eliminate that redesign over the life of the product. There's a lot of advice out there of what's the best way to predict the future is to create it. Maybe it's to invent it. Being an engineer, I guess I said, well, where have we been? How did we get here today? Where are we at today? And maybe I can make some good, reasonable conclusions about what's going to happen tomorrow and in the future. And I'm hoping we do that today. So we'll start looking back at some of the past transformations over the DMS industry. We first started out, it was reactive. We got this big notice. We didn't know how to handle it. We got a tiger team together. We got a bunch of people in a room, and we solved it. And maybe we found mitigations. And then slowly that morphed into, well, we need systems to do this for us. It can't be just a tiger team every time. So we put tactical systems in place. And once we had the systems in place, our customers asked us, well, hey, you came to us twice this year asking for money to fix obsolescence, and we only get budgets once a year. Could you tell us next year how many obsolescence issues you'll need? And then DMS forecasting was birthed. And the first time we did forecasting, we predicted 8 issues the next year. Sure enough, we got 8 issues, so from a budgeting standpoint, it was great. The problem was we got 4 issues right and we got 4 issues wrong that didn't go away, and 4 issues that we didn't predict went away. So we said we had to do better at the predicting. And then once we got better at the predicting, we say, hey, if we can predict this stuff ahead of time, let's go proactive. Let's do stuff ahead of time because we know we could probably reduce the cost of mitigating this and solving this if we do that. And then in order to justify a proactive system and give me some money to spend on DMS so that we can make it better and lower cost to you, we had to come up with DMS cost avoidance to try to show them, well, what's the value of what we're doing? And that kind of gets to where we are today. If you went to the DMS conference last year, they talked about strategic management. It's strategic availability management. And what strategies can we put in place up front that will help us along the way? And where we're going today is data-centric systems. We've heard of machine learning, data management, predictive systems, data mining, artificial intelligence. Those are the systems and the data-centric systems that we're trying to pull together and get good answers. And what are those answers? They're really the data analytics. We take a lot of data, we sort it, we combine it, we dissect it, we try to get insights out of it, correlations from it. We develop intelligence from it that helps us make better decisions. And if we can make better decisions, we know we can mitigate this DMS at a lower cost. So it all revolves around those decisions, and we do the data analytics in order to get to those answers. But once we get to those answers, once I've studied this product and how long I can sustain it affordably for the customer, I'm developing a business intelligence about that product that I didn't have before. And that business intelligence is very powerful. It allows us to look for cost reductions, insights into the product, maybe better things for our customer. So where is the future going? It's really going to be a lifecycle management focus. And in order to get that lifecycle management focus, we're going to have better lifecycle costing models. And also, it's not just cost, but to be able to have a value proposition model where, hey, the cost of this is more, but here's the value you get out of it. We can take a lower cost solution, but the value might be limited. We maybe extend it a year or two. Maybe with this solution, we can extend it 4 or 5 years. What's the value to our customer base to do that? And we want to demonstrate multiple options for the equipment over a period of time so that our customers have options and selections and menus that they can choose from. You know, the military is a very engaging world out there, very dynamic. There's new threats and changes all the time. And we have to be able to adapt to those changes. And not only that, but we do take a lot of data. There's a lot of data taken in the field. We want to port that data back to the main hub, analyze it, dissect it, go through it, and make recommendations back all in real time. And that's happening today. So where's the evidence that the DMS industry is going to move to this lifecycle management? Well, one of the things is our customers' needs are continually changing. And there's low-cost technology out there that maybe was developed for a commercial market that they'd like adapted to their systems. And how do we do that in an efficient way, a smooth, seamless way? And how do we plan for configuration changes over time so that we know we're minimizing the effects and the cost of this obsolescence? Well, there's a focus shift as well that's going on. And when I see the requirements coming to us, I see them changing. They used to ask for a DMS report so they could validate what we say was true. Hey, these parts are going away. I guess we do need money to go fix them. Now they want to know at the start, before we've even won the acquisition, all right, I want you to support this for 8 years. How are you going to do it? Let me see your predictions of what's going away and show me how you're going to mitigate it. And I'll make up the call if I want to keep you as my supplier or not. And the last one is a demonstrated roadmap. The latest product requirement I had come in, they didn't care about DMS data. They didn't care how we managed it. They wanted us to sign up for a roadmap and tell them what's going to change over time and then try to live with that or stick with that. So they can plan and they can and budget for it. And they're not very good, I mean, at least from the military standpoint. I know the commercial aerospace market's a little different, but they don't handle a big bill this year and then nothing the next year, then another big bill the next year. They'd rather have their budgets level loaded. So if we can plan that out, they can plan to level load their budgets. And they've all had to go to superiors or higher levels of authority at some point of their career to get a DMS mitigation that was really expensive signed off. And no one likes to do that. We don't even like to go to our own management teams with that. What else is out there that's going on? There's a lot of discriminating technologies that are going to affect us, and they're out there today. Rapid prototyping. So how do we get that low-cost technology in our systems very quickly, efficiently, in a short period of time so that we can maximize the use out of that? I can give you an example. We have test pilots for a helicopter. On the weekend, they bought a Cessna that they flew. After about a year, they went and bought a moving map for it for $3,000. So they come in on Monday and ask, when do I get my moving maps in my multi-million dollar helicopter? So there's a low-cost technology. Hey, it's out there. It's been developed commercially. How do we bring that in? And how do we do it in a secure way? 3D printing is another one of those. The Army and the Navy, they have plans already to bring 3D printing into their forces. They want to be able to go 10 miles back, get a new part, and get it up there within a day, rather than send it back and order stateside and take 2 weeks to get it over to theater. And they're developing libraries now to enhance that strategy and get the proper IP so that they can go do that. And then information delivery, and it is the data analytics, it is the data-centric systems, but it's also the exchange of data, the porting of data back and forth in a secure, seamless way, real time. Another thing that's been going on in the industry, and you might have seen it in the airlines or the hotels or some of the electronic manufacturers, even the bigger ones, OEMs like us. We acquired Sikorsky, now we're one team. Well, when that happened, some of the focus of these mergers internally was, hey, we want to be able to design and build anywhere. Whoever has the least work, we can get it to them and level load our workforce. We can do this as cheap as possible, figure out which business unit could do this for the best pricing. And in order to do that, we've got to have product information that's available that we can share around and pass around to the different business units. And then also manage at a higher level or a higher entity at the enterprise level. And I think I heard a lot of enterprise level solutions and talk already at the conference. And let it leverage these product families, product services that we're buying and using. So what does that mean for the future of the supply chain? I think it means we have to tighten up the supply chain. And I'm more for partnerships than throwing a PO over the wall. And I think we're going to move to that way. As you see, like some of these companies have consolidated, there's going to be a smaller playing field, and we're going to have to get intimate with each other and share our plans with each other and share our risk with each other. And then that information is going to be used to make decisions on the current equipment and future equipment. And that information has to flow back freely. And that's why the partnerships are needed more than a service or just a product that I'm buying from someone. And I need, you know, anytime we go and say, hey, we need a change, we've got to put out what the costs are going to be, what the value is going to be. And I want to use the whole supply chain to provide value. And also, if there's risk, we can share it across different entities instead of just one, you know, maybe the OEM or the government or the contractors taking on that risk. And whenever we, you know, talk about making changes and we talk about the risk, we talk about how are we going to manage that risk or put money away from that risk. And if we're exchanging freely information, we may be able to figure out if you take this piece of the risk and we take this piece, that's the lowest cost that we can do to manage this and keep this equipment going. And again, there's going to be a business intelligence from these systems and this data analytics that comes out that the business leaders of your own industry and your own leaders are going to want to know and drive their products in a certain direction because of that intelligence. And that's intelligence I don't think that we've exploited before, but I look forward to being able to exploit that. And we never know when we sort something a certain way or twist it a certain way, we're hoping to come up with the holy grail of answers. Hey, we looked at 90 things that caused this, and we came down to 3 that were really the factors that really did cause this. Okay, let's zero in on those 3 factors the next time around. And we're going to get a better answer, and maybe we'll get out in front of it. Data analytics will be the catalyst for the future change. I mean, data is being taken and recorded. There's a statistic out there that says data has doubled every 2 years. And it's not just a matter of taking data. Systems that run on your phone or your PC require more data, more storage than they ever did before. And then what is this data analytics? It's algorithms, it's predictive models, it's what-if analysis and software to be able to look at different options before they happen and choose the path of least resistance or least cost. And that data can come in what they call structured, meaning it's already in a data system that we can just pull in, or it's unstructured data. We have to convert it to a digital medium and then bring it in. So that data comes in different forms. But what we're looking for from that data is the insights, the market trends, the hidden patterns, unknown customer desires that until I really dug into the data, I wasn't sure. And I could ask another question. I know our systems, we've been taking data for 10, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years on obsolescence. How many companies are actually mining that data? There's a lot of good information in that data to tell you what suppliers are hurting you most and what ones aren't and what ones are partnering with you a little more or extending life for you or really working with you. But until you dig into that data, we don't know what that tells us, but there's information there that can make things better for us. And that's that business intelligence. And we want to use that business intelligence over the entire life cycle of the product because that's going to be the best way that we can provide the lowest cost, best value to our customers. And some of that's maybe identifying new revenue sources or cost efficiencies or market advantages. There's improved efficiency and better sustainment outcomes and better customer service and a better ability to react to the customer's needs in a quick, efficient, timely manner. And last but not least, we want to do it because there's a competitive advantage for us to understand our products and know what our products look like in the future and what decisions we have to make today in order to get there in the future. So although nobody can predict the future, we should embrace data analytics, embrace the data, look at it as an opportunity. It is an opportunity for us to bring value to our products, bring value to our customers, and that's what's going to separate us from other disciplines and other engineering groups or other competitors will be that knowledge and that basis that we get from that data. Thank you.
Nice job, nice job. Go ahead and thank you very much. We'll go ahead and do our questions now, and these should be, there you go. How do you fund your EOL program? This is one I wish they asked Eddie as well today, but you're going to be a great person for this question.
Well, the first thing is, if I was to go into a manager that knew nothing about obsolescence, it might be hard to get him to realize you need to spend money up front. And the more data we can bring to demonstrate, and I think I heard it, hey, this is what happened to us last time, and we kind of reacted to it. We want to get out in front of it now, so we maybe need to spend some money. But as you take the data analytics and you do those value propositions, you lay out options. Hey, we could spend a little bit here, and we'll get this value there. If we spend a little more, we get a bigger value. And then also, I rely on the program managers to know what the customer's needs are and desires, and to make that connection as to what level of support they want.
Outstanding. Marty, did we do a good job with that? Marty from Spirit Electronics? Oh, okay. Let's go to the next one. And this is from Matt Void at BAE. We did this once before with a distributor, now with an OEM. How is design engineering working to mitigate obsolescence issues? What tools and information can the supply chain provide to help?
Well, one of the things, if you look at the government product support manager's guidebook, which tells the sustainment manager how are you going to manage sustainment over the product, in that book, it tells you, okay, at the beginning, the concept stage, you got to have the sustainment manager involved. He's got to be telling you what things need to be set up, which things can we repair in the field, maybe which things should we repair, you know, send back to the OEM. What's the concept for that, and how is that going to work in theater? And how is it going to work from a cost perspective? So up front, we work with the design engineers. Mm-hmm. At the concept stage, we'll recommend technologies to use. Now, being a former designer, and I heard it here earlier, that when you have a function and it works, you don't want to change that. You know it's working. Hey, I'll get this thing through test, qual, cert. Yep. But it may be a little old. So and when that person is focused on the functional development, it's hard to get them to look at the reliability or the obsolescence or these other things. Right. But I've found if I go in and say, look, they're going to come down the hall with a DMS engineer award for you, And before the guy gets there, the program manager is going to stick his head out the door and say, but we can't build it. And there he's going to turn around with your award. So you want to make sure we're here to strengthen your design. We're not here to pick holes in it. We're here to make it more robust and last longer. So when you go in and talk to them, you have to tell them what you're doing for them, not what they're going to be doing for you. And that's the quickest way to get them to understand your position on something and close that gap between the supply chain and the design team.
Got it. Engage them and provide them with information for better decisions. Love it.
Right. And that flips back to the we need to be looking at our own data and figuring out better, you know, answers from our own data right. as the data-centric and data analysis.
Well, fantastic. By the way, I sell that stuff. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
All right. I really do. But Lockheed's already a customer. Okay, let's go to Q&A. I'm sure you guys have a lot of questions here. I know it's after lunch. Maybe you're a little groggy, but let's see some hands in the air. All right, over here. And please let us know who you are.
I'm actually from Converge. I was wondering, because Lockheed Martin has a lot of subcontractors that they work with, and when they come to terms with obsolescence, how do you help them or how they help you? I was just wondering how you do that process.
Yeah, when you look at contracts, they play a definite role in some of the decisions you may make in order to mitigate DMS to a certain point. Oftentimes, though, the contract, I'll give you an example. We could be in production for a five-year multi-year, and three-quarters of the way through that, a part goes away. They haven't given us the sustainment contract yet. They haven't let it out. Then maybe that's going to be, you know, awarded the next year. So we have to figure out, okay, what are we going to do for that? Are we going to tell them, hey, when you get to sustainment, you have to redesign? So we might have to go talk to our own management team and say, look, it's outside the realm of the contract. And we will do that, buy those parts up front until the contract comes in. But manager, you know, if you're a business manager, you don't like to do that, spending money on something that you would know is not concrete yet. There's risk there. So when you start looking at the evaluation of what the bill will be out there for the sustainment guy versus if we buy these parts now, and that's contract dependent, you have to look at the customer's perspective. And at those times, we can get the management to invest in those parts now so that when we are awarded the contract. But contracts do can steer this ship in one way or the other, and you really try to have to demonstrate, hey, it's a better value, or what can we do? I know in certain instances like that, parts that we had to buy that were obsolete, the day they turned on that sustainment contract, they paid us for all those back parts. So that was a positive thing. Another time we bought parts, we had a graphics processor go in the first year of a five-year multi-year with another five-year multi-year, and we wound up buying all those processors. And then when we got to the sustainment phase and we were still able to sustain them, they gave us an extra 2% fee on the contract. We had never seen that before, but I said, oh, if you guys, you know, I told our customer, if you guys can do more of that, I can take those to my management, and these things can be a lot easier to get them to fund up front. Before the contracts let. And so that helped that process a bit.
Outstanding. Who else has a question for anybody? Right here.
Rob from Converge. Vince, you've got a ton of experience, and the slides that you've shown are incredibly rich, lots of different areas, lots of detail. A lot of the areas probably stray outside of your core discipline because of the experience that you have and the knowledge you've built up. What are you doing, either personally or within the Lockheed framework, to give that knowledge to other people who are coming through in junior roles, to give them the opportunity to see obsolescence as an opportunity, not a problem?
Yeah, I used to be one of the things, I was the sector DMS expert for 6 years, so people kind of know me as a reference. And I'll never turn anybody away or anybody in this room that wants to talk about a problem or ask for my aid and helping them solve their own problems. We've tried to propagate that not only to the other DMS engineers but to the management teams as well to see what the importance of this DMS is to our overall product. And as we've done that, we've gotten more buy-in from different groups. And one thing I didn't touch on in the presentation, but I will now, is that interdisciplinary approach to the obsolescence. It can't just be the obsolescence person. I need the design person. I need the supply chain person. I need the management person. And what we found out when we go the best value propositions, it's like the middle of three circles. Okay, I've got technology over here. What's low-cost technologies available? What can we bring into the equipment? I've got the sustainment answer. Hey, this is how long I think I can cost-effectively sustain that. The program management comes in. Hey, this is how much the customer's funding cycles are, when he can get money, when he can't, when he can redesign, when he can't. And we come up with what I'll call the optimal modernization sustainment plan. And that does go back to looking at that bigger life cycle look at it than just looking at maybe, hey, I'm in the concept stage and that's where I'm focused on, or I'm in development or in production, and try to look at it at, over the whole, and also multiple disciplines looking at it. And as people become aware of this issue, they want to come get you involved. They know you're there to help them. You're not there to, you know, make their, you know, start from scratch on their design. You're trying to make that design so it's the most robust. And it would be good. Hey, we tried to plan for this for 7 years, and we got 10 out of it. Wow, that's. And we had a situation where we had a single board computer, and we had to go tell the customer, we got to get a redesign. I looked at the data. A single board computer in the commercial market lasts 5 years. No extension or anything after that. Military single board computers, 7 years, and they might extend it for two if you pay them more money. We had already gotten 9 years out of the single board computer we had designed, looking to get another two before we needed the new, you know, before the new one would come in. That was an additional 28% that extra availability of that product they could have got anywhere else. And the response was, all right, what do we need to get this done for you guys? So there was no pushback or anything, because I think we put the right data out in front of them and showed, hey, we've got a lot of value out of that last design for you. It's really time for us to move on. And so that decision went pretty easily, and we were able to get a new one in there.